Welcome to another episode of Sitting Around Talking Movies. I'm Neil Rosen, joined by Bill Bregoli.
Hello.
And Bill McCuddy.
I'm here for every take you do, Neil.
And one of our Talking Pictures regulars, Mike Sargent, is with us.
Hello, hello.
What an introduction. All right.
Mike's going to be our late night FM host guy that lives on the
back. Or I could just be the guy, like the backup guy who's like, yeah. Okay.
You're a pip.
I could be the pip.
You're a pip.
So.
Thank you, FM. Robert Klein. Do you remember Robert Klein used to do a routine FM? He would do the FM guy, very mellow, and then he'd switch. Hey, you know, like he'd switch the
right.
Do the
same studio,
and
different.
Exactly, yeah. And he would be screaming like a lunatic.
And he still can't stop moving his leg.
That's right. All right. Anyway, we're talking about The Mummy today. About.
We're also talking about clearing out your chest.
We'll be talking about The Mummy. Why is my voice worked perfectly?
You're so verklempt over Tom Cruise, who we have as a special guest today. And also, who else did we hear from?
We have the lovely and talented Russell Crowe.
Russell Crowe.
We're going to hear from Tom Cruise. We're going to hear from Russell Crowe. We're going to talk about other movies that have just opened this week called It Comes at Night, which Bill McCuddy tells me got 100% on Rotten Tomatoes. We'll tell you if it's worthy of that. And a movie called Megan Levy with Kate Mara about based on a true story about a dog that was on military missions in bomb-sniffing dog, I guess. Well, we'll talk about that in Iraq or Iran. I don't know. We'll find out. We'll also talk about, which is what we do on Sitting Around Talking Movies and our old show, Talking Pictures, talk about some things that are just coming up on demand and DVD, like United Kingdom with Rosamund Pike and David Oyelowo, and A Cure for Wellness, and Beauty and the Beast, that remake with Emma Watson.
Emma Watson.
Yeah, Harry Potter movies. So we got a lot
that
of...
That made a lot of money before her lousy Tom Hanks movie came out.
Right, and we'll also talk a little bit about the Bill Maher thing that's going on. But let's start talking about the big one. Let's talk about The Mummy. There's been many mummies going all the way back to Lon Chaney Jr. I think there might have even been a silent movie Mummy. I don't know.
Yes.
But there's definitely about a lot of mummies. Then there was the reboot of The Mummy. And who was in that, Bill Bregoli? Was it Brendan Fraser?
That's right, Brendan Fraser.
And now they, so...
Brendan, I can't get a job, Fraser?
Yeah, poor. What a sad story that is. That guy was working nonstop.
Nonstop.
He had a new, he was like the
How
white Will Smith.
What did we do with him?
He was working every year. He had a big new movie every year, and he stretched himself. What was that one where he played like 10 different characters? Almost like Peter Sellers in The Mouse That Roared. I mean, he was like...
Well, the best thing he ever did was Gods and Monsters, let's face it.
Yeah, he was great in Gods and Monsters.
I like him in this movie.
And I don't like
him. The title escapes me that it was with Christopher
George of the Jungle?
And it's where Blast from the Past.
Blast from the Past.
And they're living in the bomb drop. They think the bomb drops. So they're living in the 50s. They're living in the bomb shelter. And then he comes up like in present day, and he's like, they pass the electronics store, and he's with this girl, and she goes, it was from the present, and he goes, we've got a TV. It's a color. Remember when it's like, I got a color TV.
If only his agent had a bomb shelter, because every script after that.
What happened?
I don't know. I do know a little bit. We talked about this a couple of weeks ago, and I don't want to dump on a guy when he's down. But we talked to him at the Hamptons.
On the computer. Whatever happened.
We were at the Hamptons Film Festival. Yeah. If you want an answer to these questions, stop talking. Okay. We were at the Hamptons Film Festival, and he was loaded. And he's had a bout, I guess, with some addictions. At the time, it was alcohol.
Bill Bregoli.
Based on my smell.
Is The Mummy a reboot origin story, or is it sort of just like The Mummy exists and let's just look at a story of The Mummy?
It's there just so that Universal can create this thing called Dark Universe.
Yes.
They're not Marvel, but they have monsters.
Yes.
So they're going to kind of reboot all their monster movies.
Frankenstein, Dracula.
The Invisible Man's coming. Yes.
I think we're getting a Bride of Frankenstein before we're getting Frankenstein.
Yes, we
well, that's the better movie from the original.
Maybe.
Or the
right.
Lancaster cast.
And, of course, in the shadow of Wonder Woman, Bride of Frankenstein is probably the thing that got most easily greenlit this week. The Hollywood Reporter.
Bill, is that all you were going to say about it?
Yeah, that's all I was going to say.
Oh, okay.
What time period?
I fell asleep in the middle of it, to be honest, because I've been working night shifts.
What's it set? What time period is it set in?
Yeah, tell us about it, Bill.
Let's have Mike tell about it because
I'll tell you about it. Okay, first of all, here's the thing. Yes, you're absolutely correct. Universal needs a universe. All the major studios need a universe that they can make multiple films and spinoffs and TV series out of. Universal owns The Mummy, Frankenstein,
The Invisible Man.
Invisible Man, Dracula. Creature from the Black Lagoon, and Dracula. These are their major properties, and they have tried.
So eventually there'll be one movie where they all fight each other.
Well, here's the thing. They've done is they've taken Russell Crowe and sort of made him the collector or chaser of these monsters.
Right. Professor,
he's Professor Jekyll.
Right,
Jekyll. So we actually get to see him become.
So he's
high.
Like the Samuel L. Jackson guy from the.
He is, but
bit.
More
from the
it's
Marvel
this
Cinematic Universe.
Sort of, but they throw
what's
a lot.
His organization, Samuel?
S.H.I.E.L.D. Okay, right. They sort of, but he's not after them to recruit them to fight for good. He's after them to capture them and put them in, you know, whatever he calls his place where he keeps the monsters. But the problem with this is this. First of all, it is fun. It's definitely a popcorn movie. There are underwater zombies swimming after you. And Tom Cruise, he looks so good in it that I think they've digitally enhanced the bags.
Hollywood Reporter said he's kind of wasted, that the character is a stiff, so it doesn't look like he's having fun.
Well,
is that accurate?
Let's put it this way. The character's kind of a cipher because it serves the story. You know, he gets cursed and is now under the power of the female mummy. But the problem with this
I'm in that marriage.
Is that I saw Penny Dreadful.
Nothing.
And if you've seen Penny Dreadful. The Showtime series. Penny Dreadful is a show that, if you haven't seen it, I don't want to spoil it for you, but it's kind of brilliant. It's brilliant in that it ties in all
the
classic. Well, in that if you didn't know
I can't watch it now.
If you don't know what's going to happen.
You've ruined it for me.
Yes, I have. But if you don't know what's going to happen, it's a great reveal to find out that all these characters that are interesting and well played and really well acted, and you've got a former James Bond leading the cast and all of that, they're actually classic horror characters from novels.
Right.
They've taken that idea and kind of flipped it a little bit and tried to do
so
it.
So what's Tom Crowe. So you explained what Russell Crowe is doing. What is Tom Cruise's role in this movie? Like what
he's kind of an Indiana Jones
that steals
artifacts and stuff.
Exactly.
See, that seems interesting to me. So like Indiana Jones does it for altruistic reasons. He's bringing it back to a university or a museum or something. But this is a guy who's stealing them for, you know, to sell on the black market.
But somehow he still holds down his job in the military as some sort of military commander, which is okay.
I'm sure that's based on a true story.
Well, it would be because a better movie like Kelly Heroes or even Three Kings, you know, kind of plays with that concept.
Right, right, right.
Is there any nod plot-wise to any of the old Mummy movies?
Absolutely.
Yeah, bring Neil into this conversation.
Absolutely.
He wants to talk about black and white stuff.
Let me ask you this.
I'm talking about the more recent ones.
Oh, the more recent one. Well, I was going to ask you, the Brendan Fraser, they kind of wipe the sands. The sands blast that away.
The way like the Andrew Garfield Spider-Man's didn't really forgot the Tobey Maguire. So is this kind of
I'm sure Tobey didn't want to do a cameo in that, but
this is more
Stan
of a nod.
Is the only
Stanley's the
he's the constant.
That? Yeah, he is the only constant.
Desmond is my constant. Stanley.
But there is a nod to the original Universal black and white films. I think in terms of like the curse, you know, he was cursed and
that was a movie, The Curse of the Mummy.
The Curse of the Mummy is part of the plot of the Mummy. The Mummy was cursed. That's why he's a mummy. Can come back to life. So in that respect, there's that nod. There's that they retain. And in this time, it's like a queen you never heard of somehow is Tom Cruise's character. It's nice. It's a
I like the way you went from queen you never heard of right into Tom Cruise.
Yeah, I did.
That's daring. That's good. I like
it's
that.
It's nice for him to set up a new franchise, but if you had to say anything about his character, it's a cipher. It's an
80s
cipher.
So he reignited the Mission Impossible franchise.
Yeah.
He has not done that here, in your opinion.
Oh, I think it's fun. I will say that.
You
this
fell
is fun.
Asleep.
This is fun.
Was that because you were tired?
Did you fall asleep while talking to Tom Cruise?
No,
and what did
but,
he,
well, he?
Did you ask him
Tom,
if he's gay?
Tom, get to see the underwater
actually,
zombies?
Tom Cruise says it's more than a scary movie.
This film is going to have really obviously great action, real thrills, real scares, and wonderful kind of character humor that I love within it, very kind of dark humor that I want from this kind of film.
It does have dark humor.
Yeah.
And again, it's a blend of summer action tentpoles.
But it ain't a Sam Raimi movie.
It's not a Sam Raimi movie.
So is with humor, as Bill McCuddy and I always say, we like a little humor in our movie. Mm. Is there a little bit of humor? or is it really?
Is it Pirates of the Caribbean?
It's a substantial amount of humor.
Ant-Man humor, where it's the whole
movie. It's more like Indiana Jones humor, where there's humor peppered throughout, and the characters are funny, and there's also a nod to American Werewolf in London, a big nod to American Werewolf in London.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and so there's probably as much humor. It's closer to American Werewolf in London in terms of its tone than it is to, you know, what was the film you just named? Ant-Man. Yeah,
Ant-Man.
Definitely.
Which
definitely.
I think is
Bill,
really...
the part you were awake for, were you laughing?
No.
No.
Do you like the plot?
It's okay.
I do like the plot.
Minimal to it. Is it really more about action?
The plot is pretty straightforward. There is a nice twist in there that I can't say that... It's not that you didn't see it coming, but you really weren't paying attention to much. So when it comes, you're like, oh, okay, that's nice. You know.
Did you ever catch the... Chevy Chase movie Memoirs of an Invisible Man?
Yeah, sure.
You know, it's a must see.
Okay.
I don't think it's bad. No. I thought it was kind of cool.
You didn't get
You know what's
joke.
About Yes, I do. I know, what's better than that, by the way, is the Kevin Bacon thing, Hollow Man. Did you ever see that?
Hollow Man.
Yeah.
Paul Verhoeven. That's cool.
Jerry Goldsmith's score.
That's right. Yeah. That's right.
All right.
But
so,
wait, before we move on, we also spoke with Russell Crowe,
who talked about his fight scene with Tom Cruise.
We just made a pact between us to try and really do something with it. There's a whole bunch of different things in there. There's a bit of martial arts, there's a bit of boxing, there's some wire work, there's a couple of rugby moves. One particular back slam onto the desk, which I think will rattle the theaters when you see it.
I think Russell Crowe is really growing into Richard Burton at this point.
Because he was in plenty of bar fights, but not on film.
And he did gladiator movies early on.
So before we move on from The Mummy, would you recommend The Mummy? Is it a good nap time movie there, Bill Burgo?
It was all right. It's a popcorn movie.
Would you recommend it?
I would recommend it. Don't go
if the weather sucks this weekend,
anything.
You could go see it.
That's going to be,
frankly, that's it.
It's definitely.
So can I say, can I just say then, if we're done talking about The Mummy, that's a wrap?
Oh, good.
Sorry.
Goodness gracious.
Sorry.
I'd love to close The Mummy on that note, but I do want to ask you, do you think they will be, I know you talked about the fact that they're going to do, will there be another Mummy standalone movie, or is it just going to be The Mummy incorporated into this cinematic, universal cinematic?
I think, from what Bill had mentioned earlier, the first movie that's going to come out is going to be The Bride of Frankenstein that they've redone, and I think they've made the caster as a woman of color, too, maybe.
Will they make another Mummy standalone movie?
Possibly, yes. I think Tom Cruise, obviously.
It's not a Captain America franchise, though, you don't think?
It'll do better than the Hugh Jackman reboots of...
All right. Let's move on to the movie that got 100% on Rotten Tomatoes, and I want to know if this is worth it. It's called It Comes at Night. It's a horror film. Bill McCuddy, tell us about it, and tell me what you thought.
You saw it also, yes?
Absolutely.
So, and I have to tell you that this thing is getting incredible buzz. Joel Egerton is in it. It's an apocalypse kind of a movie. It's about a cabin in the woods where this family is living.
Well, that's original.
Well, the premise is original because it's like a 28 Days Later, or it's a zombie movie without the zombies. Would you say that, Mike?
There's
an end of the world. We're not told what it is. We just know that there's this family.
Sounds like 100 other movies, man.
But that's the point. It sounds like 100 other movies.
What's the one with the two girls, sisters that live in the woods? This apocalyptic thing.
Yeah, that was in the woods, I think. I know exactly what you're talking about.
One of them tragically gets raped, and then
This is a different movie. This is...
Okay, so it's the end of the world. You don't know why. They're living alone in the woods, and they're survivalists?
They are. They're absolutely survivalists.
Okay.
Well, and one day, another guy walks up, and he's got a family, and... That's where the trouble begins.
This is like that movie with the two sisters.
No, but here's what's
kind of like that.
Here's what's.
Does anybody remember what that one is? Did you see it with
Ellen Page?
With Ellen Page and Mary Elizabeth Winstead, or no, and somebody no with Ellen Page and the hot blonde.
The hip hop blonde.
Yes, yeah.
Greta Gerwig.
That isn't Greta Gerwig.
That isn't Greta Gerwig.
Yeah, it's the other
name
one.
Name of the movie that you're talking about.
Okay, we're looking it up. We don't lie to our audience.
No,
we're Googling right now.
Called Into the Forest.
Into the Forest.
And
it's Ellen Page and who?
And it is Evan Rachel Wood.
Evan Rachel
Max
Wood.
Max Minghella is the guy that shows up.
Right.
And
who's the other woman?
Ellen Page, Evan Rachel Wood, and Max Minghella.
Oh, Ellen Page and Evan Rachel Wood, right.
After a massive power outage,
right.
Two sisters learn to survive on their own in an isolated cabin.
All right.
All right, well, here's the thing. Plot-wise, it sounds like a lot of those movies.
And trailer-wise, and I'm making this point because if you look at the trailer, you go, oh, this is a standard, spooky, scary movie, and it's really not.
So but what makes this different, and what makes this get 100%?
I'm not on board with the 100%, and I'll explain in a minute. But Mike, go ahead.
Well, here's B minus.
Well, yes, it's a B plus actually.
And what would you give it?
I would give it probably a B plus or an A minus. But here's what makes it different, because you asked that question.
What makes it different? And what makes it good?
What makes it different? And what makes it good is that it takes something you've seen a million times before.
Yeah.
Okay. And it really explores it from a different level, because he mentioned that they're survivalists. They've forced a big become survivalist, okay? And they set it up well.
It's not by choice.
It's not by choice. He sets it up well. You see, Joel Edgerton is a man, a white man with a black wife, so that tells you, okay, he doesn't have biases necessarily. He's fairly open-minded, but you see who he's become, and they have a teenage son. The movie's really about the teenage son.
Yes.
And him growing up in this environment where something's happened, things are screwed up, and you know, you can't trust anybody, and dad's killing people all the time.
Almost like... we keep blanking on stuff.
Give me the name.
The famous movie that Key and Peele's, the director...
Get Out.
Like, yeah. A little bit like Get Out, because there's this...
Get Out.
...crazy kind of thing happening outside, and...
Well, you know what's a really good movie that takes that same plot and turns it upside down and gives it a new spin? I've talked about this on the TV show.
Cabin in the Woods.
Cabin in the Woods. I love it.
Well, but that's way over the top and that's intentionally over the top. This is much more believable.
Bradley Whitford is in that one.
Bradley Whitford.
Yeah. It's
a really good movie.
Well, Bradley Whitford, isn't he also in Get Out?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, right. Okay. Well, here's the thing I would also say about this movie is it's really an exercise in paranoia and suspense, and that's what it's able to do. It's able to throughout the film, you're really never sure if the guy who comes into his home is actually a good guy or a bad guy.
Right.
And that's not easy to sustain, and he takes some of the tropes of horror movies,
right.
You know, where characters are having nightmares that, you know, are scarier than reality.
Right.
But reality's pretty scary.
Okay, I got two problems with it.
Okay,
first of all, because I don't think we've actually convinced anyone whether to go or not to go.
Certainly.
And I think this is going to be this is going
to
be a big hit this weekend. I think it's gotten the kind of buzz it's going to make big, small numbers. It does a couple of things. It has a bunch of dream sequences, and it does a pretty good job of explaining which things are real and which things aren't until a key plot point.
Yes.
And then you're not sure whether it's a dream or not. And then at the very end, you're pretty sure it was real rather than a dream, and that explains that particular thing. The other thing is It Comes at Night is a giant red herring. And
yes.
I don't want to give too much away.
Yes.
It doesn't
yes.
have a sixth sense ending,
yes.
but it kind
yes.
of has a thing like, oh, I bet this is going to happen, and
yes.
that doesn't,
that's,
right?
Okay. Absolutely, and that's okay. the beauty of the movie, and that's why critics love
okay,
it.
Okay, so he says that's the beauty of the movie,
the
and to me...
The movie is that it doesn't go down you think
it doesn't do
go,
what you think it's
right.
going to
okay, right.
But
do
if you don't
cool
do that, if you don't,
does.
If you don't do that, I think you end up in a dead end.
Well,
so,
now you see,
so that's
let
my,
me ask you a question on that. That dead end now issue, The Witch...
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
The ending of The Witch.
Yeah.
When that happens, it's a bigger ending than you expect. But what if it had ended on a down note? Would it have made it better?
Well, but this doesn't. Now this doesn't have an ending to
that's
that.
That's my
right.
point.
Yeah.
It's
okay.
The opposite. It doesn't
right.
reverse. It goes.
So listen. Obviously, this is a
aggressive.
Movie to talk about, and people will go and they will talk about it. I think it's a good date movie. I think everybody will like it. And guess who else is in it, Neil?
But don't go to dinner.
Who else?
Riley Keough.
Riley
from the Girlfriend Experience on Stars and Elvis's granddaughter.
Is that
for those of you who are not who don't have video because this is an audio podcast? Every week Neil keeps asking how much time has elapsed. Like there's some magic number we're supposed to have for this.
No. I'm just curious.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Well, wear a watch. Anyway,
but here's a question, Bill.
We have
does
no time.
Does he only look
here?
At how much time is left when you start talking?
Yeah, it's apparently okay.
all
that's
right.
my problem.
So, all right. So
let's
you guys recommend it comes on. Moving on. Megan Levy, which sounds like a girl that I
now,
dated
this I haven't seen.
In college, like Megan. But, all right, Megan Levy, Mike Sargent, why don't you tell us?
Okay, well, Megan Levy is about
a true story, right?
It's a great trailer, and it's a really strong. It looks. If you watch this thing, you'll go. I have to see this movie.
Well, I haven't seen the trailer, which I tend
to
avoid.
You've seen the movie. More important,
I've seen the movie, and
so if Megan you were Levy, cutting the trailer, what would you put? No, I'm kidding. Go ahead.
Well, Megan Levy is about the main character, Megan Levy, who was in Iraq and was essentially a war hero, or in the Purple Heart. But she was what she did in Iraq was she was a dog handler. So they have bomb sniffing dogs. And she went way beyond the call of duty. But what happened is she's a woman who had difficult connecting with people in her life after her best friend died. But she really ended up connecting with this dog. So much so that after she suffered PTSD, she ended up going on a campaign to free this dog, because what you find out is that these dogs who work for the Marines, these dogs of the Corps, essentially when they've outlived their usefulness, they just put them down because they're unadoptable.
Really?
You got a dog that's used to doing all these things you got to do at war. They're weapons.
Right.
So the dog may be beautiful, have 3-4 years to go, but once it can't do it, they put them down. So
not like greyhound dogs that they rescue from that racing and give to people.
There's no rescuing. They put them down. And so she...
Until Megan Levy.
And so from that standpoint, it's good. And
Levy, no dog behind. Is that the slogan? That's what it should be. That should be the slogan for the movie. Levy, no dog behind.
Well, no? I will say this. In terms of the movie itself, that's the story. I was surprised at how straightforward this is. And honestly, I didn't know the story of Megan Levy, so I kept waiting. Like, well, when is she going to do something extraordinary? I mean, what she does in Iraq is okay.
How's Kate Mara?
Kate Mara is very convincing in the role. I'm not a fan, but I know a lot of people are.
So they're going to give her the dog. Do you see that coming a million miles away?
No, you do not.
Really?
No, you do not.
So I just gave that away, actually.
Not really.
Don't tell us. I don't want to know.
I'm not even going to tell you.
Don't spoil it.
Oh, I'm not spoiling anything. They give her the dog.
I give it 3 stars, but I give it 4 if you're a dog lover. If you're a dog lover, they don't...
It's a shepherd, right?
It is a shepherd, but they do not play up. It's not mawkish. It's not corny. It's not syrupy. It's like when the dog character's introduced, you know, you kind of... You know, it's so, like I said, I was surprised at how straightforward the story is, but it's a strong story.
Paw up. Can I tell you a quick story about Marine dogs in Vietnam? Because my friend who wrote Hamburger Hill and also...
I'm sorry,
Heartbreak, we're out of time. I've looked at the...
But perhaps off the air.
Matt Damon?
I'm sorry, I'm
on the Kimmel Show?
My apologies to Matt Damon. We ran out of time tonight.
I'll make it 30 seconds. He wrote Heartbreak Ridge. He wrote Hamburger Hill, and
the Clint Eastwood.
Yeah. I got a great story. Actually, we should have him as a guest. We should have him as a guest because he's
a as Gunny.
Tell the story.
Gunny, tell him like this.
Okay. Gunny. So he was in Vietnam, obviously, because he's considered an expert and writes. He wrote Heroes. He wrote a bunch of movies.
The Henry Winkler film.
Yeah. So they have three. If you're at base camp, they have 3 kinds of dogs. They have the bomb kind, or the kind that look for what are the things you can step on? Landmines.
Yes.
IEDs. Then they have...
What is it?
IEDs.
Then they have the ones that go out on patrol and can smell Charlie or can smell the enemy or whatever. And then they have a third kind that do nothing but do the perimeter. And they're all bred for those 3 different things.
Interesting.
So the perimeter dogs are released at night and just go right around the fence, and that's all they do. And if they see anything, they bark. Then the second kind go with the guys out into the jungle and say, the enemy's over there. And the third kind sniff out the, I guess the bombs, but also the landmines. And they all do a specific thing, which gets me back to what you said about these dogs only do one thing, and so they're put down because they can't really go.
And are they all German shepherds?
Yeah, I think these were all shepherds. Yes.
Yeah. What you're telling me about these dogs is kind of like a good metaphor for men in dating, don't you think?
Very interesting.
Yeah, it is. That is kind of fascinating. Well, I have to say, you find this out, and again, everything about the story is told very straightforward. There's nothing that hits you over the head. It's not overly patriotic. It's not overly about PTSD. It's not overly about women in the army. All the elements are there.
Right.
And you see it. You know, she was, you know, one of the only women and da-da-da-da. And you see trying to hold a relationship, you know, and there's a whole lot in that story.
So by the way, Neil, I've been listening to a lot of other podcasts, and they have sponsors, so I just want to say today is brought to you by LaCroix. LaCroix sparkling water. We're enjoying delicious grapefruit. And by Annie's homegrown friends, MoneyGrams. So hopefully we'll get sent a lot. In fact, if we could get sent things, it's also brought to you by Rolls-Royce and Bentley.
That's right.
Exactly.
All right. That's right. Well, anyway, what we do on the show for many, many years.
What we did on the show.
What we did
on,
well, we, on the
podcast. Cue the sad music.
He's the king of all media.
The king of all media. Is we look at the films that are, you know, maybe didn't get their due when they were in theaters. Or
exactly.
The, you know, obscure on-demand films that go straight to on-demand.
Well, one of those is Beauty and the Beast, which nobody saw.
That for last. Okay. We'll talk about United Kingdom first, which is Rosamund Pike and David Oyelowo. Which is based on a true story of how could we best describe this?
He was a king. He was the man who would be king. It's going to be
a prince or a king.
I think he was the king. He was heir to a throne. I don't know if he was the prince or the king of a South African country that escapes me. I saw this like 6 months ago at a super early preview that Oyelowo and Rosamund Pike came to
Wakanda?
That Peggy Siegel threw a party for at...
He was the king of Botswana,
King
actually.
Of Botswana, and it was king,
and,
not the prince.
He had this controversial marriage to a British woman. He's black.
In the late 50s, or does it say like
I think it was the early 60s or the late 50s. It was that time period. And it was the late 40s. And
it all looks the same in England.
And neither country, you know, this was a very the era was not exactly a liberal-minded era, so to speak.
Although we should say that in England they were a little more tolerant of interracial couples than they were in this country, I think, at the time.
Well, everybody's condemning her and they're condemning him, and it's jeopardizing his chance.
So it's a little guess who's coming to dinner because she brings him home, and the neighborhood boys are like start to beat him up,
they ask him to come back to England because there's some like problems with him.
Well, they're not going to let him. They're not going to let him bring the wife. But they're not going to let him bring the wife first.
He thinks he's just going there.
And he gets the wife in
for like a couple of days, and then he just, you're stuck here for 3 years or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, it's a true story, and it's a very interesting idea.
It's a little by the numbers.
I think, first of all, and this is not the movie's fault, that it came out around the same time as Loving. Another Joel Edgerton,
where he plays,
movie, which is about, the
first
interracial marriage in the United States that, caused this
a wildly overrated movie
court decision. And I interviewed Rosamund Pike and David Oyelowo. And I talked to them about that, and
let's listen to that. What did they say?
Well, unfortunately, I'm going to have to relay the story. But what they said was
Bregoli brings sound.
What they said was that.
Do the voices. Do Rosamund. You do a great Rosamund.
They
bite.
Felt it was a very different story.
You asked them.
I said, are you concerned about the fact that another similarly themed movie stole your thunder?
Weren't the publicists thrilled when you asked that question?
So to speak, because this is a topic that's not dealt with very often in film, and here you go. It's sort of, I didn't say this, but it's sort of like how often do you have Truman Capote movies, and then you had two Truman Capote movies.
Dude, we've talked about this before. Hollywood is Noah's Ark. Everything comes in twos.
Historical interracial couple movies in the 40s and the 50s are so few and far between.
Right.
You can count them on one hand, and there's two that come out within a few month period of each other.
Saving Private Ryan, Thin Red Line.
They felt it was a very different story. And they were not concerned. But what are they going to say? Yes, we're concerned. I mean,
wait, can I make a point here? This is just interesting, irony here.
Yeah, jump in. Give it a shot.
Okay. But what's interesting is that
I'm going to say no. All right, let's move on. No, all right.
We're running out of time. Joel Edgerton, this is the second film. It Comes at Night, where he plays someone in an interracial relationship.
Oh, that's true, right.
And Carmine Jojo, this is her second film, because remember she was in the Ethan Hawke film where he played...
that time-traveling detective? Chet Baker.
Chet Baker.
Yeah.
She was his wife/girlfriend.
Born to be the Blues or Born to be the Blues.
Right, exactly. And I interviewed her.
Right.
About this movie, and asked her about these interracial roles, and because this is her second, his second, and I just asked her what she thought if things were changing you know, and what her thoughts were on that. She had some.
And let's listen to that. Oh, no, you didn't bring that either.
I can send that to Bill. Okay.
Can you do the... Did you do the Loving Junket, anybody, with Ruth Nega?
No, I didn't do the Loving Junket.
Did you love Loving? Because it got everyone was coming all over it when it was.
Not me, brother.
Me either. And I was like, I thought it was really, really, really.
I had problems with Loving, and I had problems with United Kingdom.
But remember, that was going to sweep the Oscars, or it was going to be very.
Problem I had with Loving is I felt that the director was remiss in by focusing on this couple's life. You know, which was not that exciting, and you see this landmark Supreme Court decision come down where interracial marriage is legal, but yet you don't see that the world has changed around them, and I think that it's really...
Didn't change around them. They moved to suburban D.C., I think it was, and with no problem. Nobody was giving them any shit at all.
I know, and well, there was a lot of problems with that movie from a plot perspective. When that decision comes down, you think that they're at the center of making that decision happen, and they really... They show you something on television with Martin Luther King making a speech, but they don't really show you all the civil rights protests that are happening around the country, how the 60s are exploding, how all this stuff is happening, how the world is really
Well, I don't think they had the
changed.
Dough. I think they were. I think some of those
and,
were
and
production
the Lovings
decisions,
were kind of a boring couple to focus on. As far as United Kingdom goes, the movie that is coming out this week, I was a little bored by that too, I have to tell you, and I think that the screenplay was a little.
I think it's a better movie than Loving.
I think it is a better movie than Loving, but I still think it's a little slow in spots, and
it's a little by the numbers. I mean, it's a little what you'd expect.
I didn't see
United Kingdom.
United Kingdom. I did see Loving. I don't know if you really want me to tell you what my issues were with Loving.
Mike is an African American gentleman, since we're not on video.
I'm African American, so my issues were very specific. My issue very specific is that I understand this is a film that was made by a white man, and I understand that many and most white people have kind of a blind spot when it comes to racial things because they're just not dealing with it. But I feel that it's very telling that here you got a movie about a pregnant woman who gets put in jail over the weekend, and we focus on the husband missing her. It's like, what?
I hadn't even thought of that.
Yeah, exactly. That's my point. It wouldn't even be thought of.
What do you think of United Kingdom?
I didn't see United Kingdom, but I just feel that.
Nice
that
listening.
The issues.
We all said that, Neil.
The issues that were at stake, and this is where I would agree with Neil, that there are a lot of issues at
can't
stake.
Hear you.
That he. There are a lot of issues at stake that, on a human level, I could have been a lot more affected, okay, if he had focused on what was really going on. And to focus on the husband when it's a black woman, you look at the whole movie. The husband is kind of like laying on her lap. She's the one who made all this happen.
The shame of what you're saying is she's the best thing in the movie. She got Oscar nominated. Yeah, Michael Shannon shows up, and that's
really
interesting because it's kind of stunt casting. But I think she's so amazing, mm-hmm. and she's so muted, so pushed to the back, or not the back of the bus.
But I also understand why that was done. It was done because they're not looking for the black audience. They're looking for the white.
All right, Mike. Bill Maher got in a lot of trouble last week on his live telecast of Real Time by using the N-word. And, there was
a joke, in the context of a joke.
Yeah, it was. Yes, it was in the
context
of a joke.
To anybody who didn't hear it.
Whether you found the joke funny or not is debatable. But, there was some outcry to fire Bill Maher. And Bill Maher got fired, actually, from this old show, Politically Incorrect, because
right.
he said that,
so he said something politically
that the 9/11 right. people were not cowards or something like that bombed the World Trade
right.
Center. But, so there was a call for bring us the head of, what was that movie, Bring Us the Head of Alfredo Garcia. Bring Us the Head of Bill Maher.
Right.
And,
in a duffel bag. No, that's a different movie.
But HB, that's six heads in a duffel
bag. Eight
right,
bag.
We can just
eight.
Go on like this. Eight kegs. So,
you saw the abbreviated
version.
It seems
like Bill Maher will survive this crisis. And this weekend, as Bill McCuddy will tell you, he has booked Chris Rock and...
Yeah, I think he reached out to Chris Rock. I know he's got Ice
Smart.
Cube and I just give three All prominent right.
so,
blacks.
So
guests.
I'd like your perspective on this, Mike. Do you feel that... That Bill Maher should,
Quentin Tarantino uses the N-word all the time.
Louis C.K. uses the N-word all the time.
Okay, here's what I think.
Is that
I think.
White stupid guy thing to say?
No, not really. I mean, I think first of all, what's happening with Bill Maher is exactly what should happen. People should be upset. People should question it. His job should be calling the question. It should be looked at. It should be discussed. That's what should happen. Should Bill Maher be fired? No. But I think what's happening right now, having this conversation, having conversations about race, is what should happen. Because from my perspective, somebody like Bill Maher is a comedian. Comedian who specifically makes his money by being controversial. Okay? So it's second nature to him to be mildly offensive. Okay? And Bill Maher is the kind of guy who clearly has friends like Chris Rock that he can call and whatnot.
Right. A lot of people have said this week, he's not a racist.
No, he's not a racist. He's not
Al Sharpton, who is the first guy out of the box to, you know, yell and scream at this, is friends with Bill Maher.
Well, that's my point.
And Al Sharpton said, yeah, I don't care that we're friends. I'm going to give him a hard time over this. But I think Al Sharpton was toned down slightly for Al Sharpton because of the friendship that he had. I think he's done the show.
Okay, I'll give you another Al. Al Franken said he's not going to do the show. Al Franken said this week he's going to back out.
Well, Al Franken
is that the right thing to do?
Well, he's also said that Kathy, what's her name?
Griffin
is doing the right thing. But you see, here's what I think. I think, you know, again, and I'm glad you brought up Al Franken. Al Franken's on the other side here where, like, well, no, you're absolutely right, but it isn't offensive. You know, like, is it offensive to you, Al? Okay, and why? Okay, and the question becomes, like, who's saying it? What's the context of them saying it? All those things matter. I have a lot of Jewish friends who say things, call themselves names of Jews that I didn't even know existed, you know, but they can joke
about it. The only Jew here, what are some of them?
Oh, I'm just saying. I'm just saying, all kinds of, like, stuff that...
Regale us.
No, I'm just saying, there's all kinds of stupid, negative Jew phrases I had never heard, but they've heard it.
But this is the oldest argument in the book, that black comics can use the N-word and Jewish comics can put Jews down and call them names.
Right, it's whatever...
When's that day going to come where we decide that can't...
Here's the problem, and similar to this, like, if you remember, Clint Eastwood was like, I don't know what everybody's upset about in my day, he didn't get it, but, and I understand where he's coming from, not that I agree with him, is that yes, in this day and age, he should be called out. He's got to be careful. He is in a public forum. There are people you can offend, and you need to be conscious of that, because if you let it go, then we'll have people who shouldn't even come close to
Let me ask you a question. Bill Maher is liberal. Mm-hmm. If Dennis Miller had said that, and he was on HBO now, would they fire a conservative guy for using the N-word and allow...
Again, it would still come down to the context. It's like anything else. It's like, it's anything. If you walk in and I'm choking Bill, right, you'd pull me off a Bill. Mm-hmm. But if you pull me off a Bill and then you realize Bill has turned into a zombie, oh... You might help
which he did at The Mummy, actually.
Well, I'm just saying.
He actually did. Saying, so it's topical.
To me, I think it's about context.
Two more movies.
That's my opinion.
Okay. A Cure for Wellness.
Wait, you guys aren't going to give me your opinion?
Right. The man. The man just stomped on you.
Yeah.
Well,
no, I want to know what your opinion is. That's just my take.
I think your original statement on this, I agree with. I think that it should be discussed. Mm-hmm. But, it's interesting to me that some comedians can get away with this, mm-hmm. and it's not even an issue. And some comedians can't.
Well, they could.
And I'm not talking about black comedians. I don't know what's happening. Some white comedians that make it's not even discussed.
Something's happening in this country where suddenly
I
don't know.
That you are.
I don't know. I'm afraid for people like Kathy Griffin and Bill Maher that they're being censored in this way. I don't think I have to laugh at these jokes, but I certainly defend their right to tell them. And I hope that we're not coming to a time, you know, we've had this conversation. I'm not going to bore this audience again, but people like Jerry Seinfeld say they don't do college campuses anymore because they have to work so politically correct that they don't even want to go there. And that's Jerry Seinfeld, who's one of the cleanest, sort of most straightforward guys on the planet.
True.
So I would hate to think that with the death of Don Rickles and some of the people who have lost
Don Rickles never used the N-word.
No, but he was extremely offensive to everybody.
Right. And the Spanish guy said blah 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 right on the.
I watched on Johnny. Since we're bringing this up, I watched Carson the other night. Okay. Did you see Who was Freddie Prinze Jr.?
How often in the 21st century do you hear people say, I watched Carson?
Well, yeah, I caught that line, too. I caught Carson the other night. It's like...
There's a channel called the Antenna Channel, which in here in New York is on channel 1,265.
Okay.
So they had Freddie Prinze on when he was like 22 or 23.
Oh, wow.
And it was some of the most racist, derogatory stuff
well,
that
I
ever heard.
Everything
I can't believe
I've been watching
about
the 70s.
Blacks, about Hispanics,
used
about
to have
Jews,
Freddie
about...
It's another time. Have you watched any of the Dean Martin roasts?
Well, but there's that seems more excusable, or it seems like that's where you're supposed to bring your disc game.
Listen,
but
if you really
want
to get historical about this, forget about the 60s and the 70s.
Well, you were with George Jessel, and I know he told you a lot of things.
Nobody's getting that reference, except if we have any 80-year-old listeners to the podcast.
We have no listeners left at this point.
There was a time before our time, honestly, we're in the 30s and the 40s. If you would go to a vaudeville show and stuff like that, I mean, ethnic humor was
stock and trade.
Right.
That was the humor of the day, man. You know, and nobody, you know, no matter what race, color, creed, religion you were, it was just expected that they were gonna like dump not on your on all anything was open territory. You know, fair game.
Would it be fair to say that white guys were writing Amos and Andy? Is that probably true, or were they?
Amos and Andy on radio was not played by white guys.
That's correct.
It was played by, by black guys. It was played by white guys. And then when
In the movies, they became.
In the movies, they had to use. Started on the radio.
And when they posed for publicity stills.
I didn't know this. This is great.
They put blackface on the two actors that played Amos and Andy.
And they had to get the black actors to act the way they had been imitating blacks on the show.
When they went to movies and television, they had to obviously cast black actors in the role.
And actors had to play the way it had been done.
If you Google the Amos and Andy radio images and you'll get those stills, you will see they're distinctly white people with white features with blackface on them.
Right.
Anyway, it was a very different world. And fortunately, I mean, that wasn't, you know, we have moved politically to a more politically correct environment. But Jackie Mason complained that it's gone so far in some direction that you, like your Jerry Seinfeld line, Bill, that you can't really even some things could be funny and not really offensive, but it's gone. He feels it's gone too far in the other direction. I don't know. Would you agree with that or not?
I think he's probably, if he did another Broadway show, would do almost exclusively and only Jewish humor. I don't think he would do anything against anybody. Every Jew knows a building. If they bought it, they'd be rich today.
Westbury, I saw in the paper.
Fine, but I mean, if you go see his act now, I bet he doesn't make derogatory remarks about Italians or blacks or Irish or anything. I'm sure he's just sort of honed his act to just being about...
All right, anyway, moving on. Cure for Wellness. Two more movies to
do. Oh, really? We got more podcasts?
More.
We can dispense with this one pretty quickly.
Let's make short work of this.
What a gorgeous looking movie this was on when you saw the trailer.
Gore Verbinski. You're saying, whatever happened to Gore Verbinski? Well, he directed this movie.
It's a piece of shit.
Yeah,
I hate the movie. It's terrible.
It's
unwatchable.
It starts out great.
First 20 minutes are like.
The plot makes no sense. It just degenerates into like a mess. Yes. It starts out interesting.
It's a wellness spa that what's his name goes to.
Dane DeHaan.
Dane DeHaan is sent from London to get the CEO who's gone to this spa to bring him back to the company because
some
there's
some
big transaction that's going to be taking place. And then he gets this wellness spa.
Right.
It turns out to be some...
Should have been a Coen Brothers movie.
But it becomes... it goes into, like, this is interesting and what's going on to the spa. And then it goes into some supernatural stuff, which I don't mind if you establish that premise early on. But then when you shift gears in the middle and all of a sudden nothing makes sense.
And at the very end, it has one of those huge CGI kind of...
Yes, and somebody's hundreds of years old and it's just...
And then what's the other movie that's on demand this week?
The other movie that's on demand. See how quickly we're going, Bill Regoli, so we could just whip through this and...
So I can make my deadline.
Okay. We woke him up.
It's a tale as old as time.
What are you going to see?
What am I
going
to see?
The Big Sick.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
The
Big Sick, which I'm dying to see.
Produced by Judd Apatow and directed by...
Yes, I got to crank work out.
It's a document, Richie, right?
What's that?
It's a doc, right?
No. It's a romantic comedy that turns into very kind of deep...
Lisa was talking about it in the podcast.
Yeah, it's great. I hear it's great.
And then we've got
Beauty and the Beast.
The new version of Beauty and the Beast, which I think if you've never seen the original animated feature, which is a work of art, or you've never seen the stage production, which was also tremendous, then you'd probably like this.
Made a shitload of money.
Right, but like, if you're familiar with
all over
of those
the world.
Two productions, this is, although perfunctory and not terrible, just really lacks the magic for me of the original.
Has cartoon. Two songs that are great, although not as great as they were on stage. And other than that, it's kind of...
I mean, Ewan McGregor is kind of flat as the candlestick. And, you know, I much...
He doesn't really light it up.
I much prefer Jerry Orbach in the cartoon. And, I think that David Ogden Stiers was better as the clock than whoever's ever doing that. And, you know, it's just...
Well,
I don't know.
The character design let them down because it made things so realistic. In the animated cartoon, or the hand-drawn animated cartoon, they could make big features in the eyes and be much more expressive than you
And the stage production, they were real-sized people. And in the movie, I guess what we're trying to say is a candelabra is really the size of a candelabra, and it sort of loses something in the translation.
It blew me away, the original animated feature, and so did the stage production. was terrific. You made on the television show some comment about that. I don't remember what it was, but it was very incisive, Bill McCuddy.
Yeah, I have no idea.
something being lacking in this
Yeah,
new
I was getting
version.
Paid then. This is for free. All right,
yeah,
so
that's true. All right. Well, anyway. Well, there you go.
What opens next week, Mike? Do you know? What's a big opening?
I'll tell you what's coming next week.
So this is the Mummy this week, and what comes along to try and kill the Mummy and Wonder Woman?
Kill the Mummy.
I think Wonder Woman's probably going to beat the Mummy this weekend.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
You do?
Nobody really cares.
Well, that's not what they thought when they picked the release date originally.
Next week, let me go to
drum roll.
I was looking to see.
Hey, I got it.
You know, at this point, the podcast audience could Google it faster
you
than
mean
we are.
Week after.
Oh,
this week.
47 meters down in Cars 3.
47 meters down in Cars 3.
Rough night.
Oh, Rough Night looks interesting, but the headline for Cars 3 is Cars 3 Audience
Rough
Zero.
It'll be better than Rough Night in Jericho.
All right. We keep getting longer and longer in these podcasts because we're suffering withdrawal.
And we love you because we love you, the audience, the podcast audience.
We're not doing our TV show, but we're still shopping it around.
Believe me, if we had something else to do, we'd be a much shorter podcast.
So for Bill Bregoli and Bill McCuddy.
We watch everything now so you don't have to.
And Mike Sargent.
Good afternoon.
Mike Sargent, what's your Twitter handle, Mike?
My Twitter handle is Mike on Screen, and you can listen to me on WBAI.org. You can go to my website, lifeislikesciencefiction.com, and you can see all about the radio show I do called Night Shift.
There you go.
Twitter me. As Stephen Colbert says, yes, I've twatted.
At Bill McCuddy.
At Bill McCuddy.
At Neil.
How do you spell McCuddy?
McCuddy.
At Neil Rosen Apples, and Bill Bregoli one day might get a Twitter account if we're lucky.
I look like I tweet.
There you go. Anyway, you know, everything that we say here on Twitter, it's official.
Yes.
You get my reference with
of
the,
course.
Yes, there you go, the Sean Spicer thing. Anyway, thank you for sitting around talking movies with us. We'll sit around and talk movies again with you next week.